Welcome to the Human Experience Podcast with Carl Sokia.
Aloha! And welcome to another episode of the HX Podcast featuring Carl Sokia. Well, today is a very, very special episode. I have a good friend of mine and one of the queens of human resources here in the Salt Lake Valley of the state of Utah, my good friend Sydney Bruce. Sydney, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I can't believe I'm here.
I'm
so honored. I really do.
So glad to have you here. Now, Sydney is a good friend of mine. We actually connected, it was probably just about over a year ago.
Yeah.
We connected and kind of talked about, she'd gone off and started her own organization and business. And she was so kind to let me kind of lean on her as I left and started my own entrepreneurial journey. And I was like, I want to know what you're doing, how you're doing it. And she was so kind and invited me into Kiln where she was officing at the time. And went in there and just was able to pick her brain, and we became friends. And it was so nice to be able to talk about a lot of things actually that we have in common, whether it be growing up in the state of Utah or being biracial young people growing up in this, in this world, and everything from race to religion and so forth. And it really, I think, bonded the two of us together. And we've kind of worked with each other ever since and see each other all the time and connected with one another and share ideas. Yeah. And it's been a lot of fun. And so I asked Sydney to kind of come in and talk a little bit about her human experience, her life, what she does with business, and kind of coming up and how that all worked out for her. So I'm really excited to have you here. And we'll have you talk a little bit about what you're doing today and right now in your career a little bit later, because we love the organization that you're working for as well. And I want to give them a shout at the end. So,
oh, absolutely.
So Sydney, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself, give a little background history, about growing up, your family and so on, and how that all worked out. And we'll go from there.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Awesome.
So what I love is that we both have this like crazy biracial upbringing. And I think that probably is what makes me who, I don't know. It definitely is who, it makes me who I am.
Absolutely.
I grew up in Salt Lake City. My dad is from Montgomery, Alabama.
Awesome.
My mom is from Burley, Idaho.
Wow.
So, I mean, let's
two different worlds.
Completely different worlds. Absolutely. So yeah. That's just been my life growing up, is trying to figure out, like, where do I fit in between these two completely different cultures?
Yeah.
I have all brothers.
Oh,
I'm
man.
Only girl.
Only girl. Where do you fall in the rank?
Girl. Right in the middle.
Got it. Sure. Right in the middle.
Right in the middle.
That's
and
funny.
So there's quite a big age gap between all of us, but it's... Yeah, growing up an only girl has definitely, I mean, it's just crazy. And so now I'm in this situation, got two stepdaughters.
Yeah.
And so my fiance, he's always like, oh, Sydney, you got to find some compassion, some sweetness. Cause that was not how, I mean, it was like, why are you crying? What are tears? Like, what are those?
That emotions? Had to be a crazy dynamic. I mean, my wife was the same way.
Yeah.
She had only brothers. And then we have all these girls, but I was raised with only sisters. So I've never had a brother. And so it's always like this weird dynamic. So I can totally imagine that.
That is so how Josh and I are.
Is
and we're completely opposite.
Oh, that's
because
funny.
He came from all sisters. So he's really emotional. And he'll be, he's like, really, oh, tell me how you're feeling. And I'm like,
none of your business.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm fine. I'm good.
That's right. That's right. Oh, geez, I love it.
Oh, it's so much fun. So, yeah, I grew up in Salt Lake, and the majority of my life, I went to high school up in Park City, and
awesome.
That was a big change.
Well, I bet it was.
Draper to Park City.
Yeah.
It's a small town, not what I was used to at all. I mean, it was 5A school at Alta, and then Park City, it's everybody went to elementary, middle school, high school together.
Absolutely.
So here I am, like, oh, brand new. Don't look like anyone else.
Sure,
it's just
right.
A completely different experience.
Yeah.
And after that, I've kind of always been in this like HR role. And I think it's because I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up.
Sure.
Which is a lot of people, right?
Like, amen.
Do I want to be an attorney? Do I want to be a counselor?
That's right.
And you get to blend the two in
That's
HR.
That's right.
That's
well,
what
I always say great HR people never wanted to be in HR, right?
No, never.
you tripped and fell into it, and then you found that you were good at it, and she 100%, just kept going.
100%. Yeah.
I agree 100%. With you.
It's because I couldn't decide. And so then all these little pieces start, coming together. It makes it fun.
I love it. So tell us a little bit about starting off, your career. What was your first role? Kind of, what did you do? And what did you really find that you loved about human resources?
Yeah. So my first role, I was actually, that kind of catapulted me into human resources.
Yeah.
I was working for a developer, and there was an HR lady there that was just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
And I watched her, and just everything about who she was as a person and the way that she tried to kind of create the culture at that company, I was like, okay, I want to be like her when I grow up.
Awesome.
And so I was in kind of a finance role actually when I fell into human resources.
Sure.
And then all of these, it's just like, you know, an HR department of one, you're doing everything.
Absolutely.
And I went and got SHRM certified and I was like, this is my calling. These are my people. This is what I love to do. I mean, it's just always, it's so funny because it's always, you know, I'm always the person that people are coming to for like, let me tell your life stories. And sometimes I'm like, I don't even know why. Did they really just tell me that? You know,
right? Because you do play the counselor quite often.
Yeah, you play the counselor quite often. I feel like you're kind of this middle ground between the executive team and your employees, and so somehow that always naturally happened, anyways.
Yep.
And so when I started to stumble into what is HR, and it just was a natural fit for me.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love human experience. So like what you're doing is amazing, but I just want to help people be the best versions of themselves. And I think that's why I love HR so much.
Yeah, I love it. So looking back on your, you know, whether your childhood all the way up through your first role, what are some of the things that you felt maybe prepared you to be, you know, to really, number one, enjoy, you know, the human resources field, but also to really be good at it? You know, was it, you know, being, you know, with a bunch of brothers and having that? Was it being ethnically diverse and having, you know, different viewpoints from your parents? Yeah. What do you think really, you know, made you fall in love with this world, but also gave you maybe a special set of tools or skills to help you really, you know, excel in this area? Because you're very good at what you do.
You
know, what do you think, you know, kind of paved the way for that to make it, you know, to really drive that success?
Yeah, I think it was growing up, I always had to, you know, so Thanksgiving at my mom's house was, it was at a certain time.
Sure.
And you got dressed up and you all sat down and ate. And Thanksgiving at my dad's house was a free for all and there was foods out and family members and cousins. And it just was very, very different experience. And I had to learn how to navigate between both cultures back and forth. And so for me in human resources, it's the same. I took those skills and I can apply it between, okay, I have to sit on a board with a whole bunch of executives and be able to, you know, express my views and be the voice of the employees. But then I also have to be able to go and sit down and have a conversation with the janitor and talk through all of those, you know, whatever is going on in his life or her life. And so I think that diversity in my younger age has made me successful in my career now.
Yeah.
Just being able to talk to different people and relate and find common ground.
Yeah.
And so that's what
I love that. Cause I think you and I are very similar when it comes to that space. I was given some feedback. So I was interviewing for a role a while back, and an executive had asked me to come in and interview. And so I went, and the CEO, she was phenomenal. She says, I want you to meet in this glass boardroom with all these people. I said, okay. And the first group was a line level, you know, group of people. And then they brought in, you know, accounting, and then it was some mid-level leaders, and then some directors, and then CFO, and then it was the CEO. And when we finished up the interviews, she goes, I just have to tell you, there's something I really loved watching. And I don't know if you're aware of this. And I said, no. And she said, the first group of people, you guys were laughing. I could hear you all the way down the hall. There was all these fun things going on. And she goes, and progressively, as you met with different people, you kind of almost became a chameleon and you adapted to who they were. And that's how you took the, you know, that kind of the interview. She goes, and you were with the CFO, you were very, you know, professional, straight. You were still, I could tell you were happy and friendly and so on, but you were very professional, and it kind of goes along the lines. I never really realized that. I'd always just kind of, it's just a natural thing, like you said, that came from, I think, my diverse background. I think my parents, you know, being with, you know, people that, you know, come from different worlds, you kind of adapt to that. But also, you know, as growing up in, you know, culturally in the neighborhoods I was in, the schools I was in, jobs I'd had, you have to learn to coexist with all of those people and almost bring them together at times.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's interesting that you say that, because I was given that feedback and it kind of opened my eyes. Like, man, I really am able to adapt to all of these different audiences and kind of fine tune your message and still be able to give the same message. So
but that's what makes you such a great leader too, right? And I think probably such a great father as well, because you don't parent one kid the same way you do the other. You have, you know, feedback with an employee the same way with everybody.
Totally.
You have to adjust and know your audience and learn how to relate with them.
Yeah.
And so just growing up in diversity, I mean, that's what it's about, right?
Yeah.
Is trying to be able to, you know, have these different conversations and find a common ground.
You bring up a good point. I think there's a lot of, especially in the business world, but it's in the communities, neighborhoods, we tend to blanket things, right? It's if we're going to do it for one, we've got to do it for all. And I've had that excuse and it drives me bonkers when people say, well, if I do it for them, I've got to do it for everybody. It's not how it works. You've got to find a way to maneuver through that. How can people get out of that rut where they start to treat, you know, everybody like, you know, the same versus going out and individualizing and tailoring experiences or relationships or in the HR space, policies and benefits and so on. It takes a lot of energy, takes a lot of time, but how do we get people to break away? What advice would you have for somebody that kind of does the blanketing, whether it be, you know, the way that they look at people, the biases they have, or how they kind of lead people? What would you say are some tools they can utilize to get out of that rut?
Get up out of your desk and go and talk to everybody.
Sure.
Don't sit here and think that you have all of the ideas and that, you know, this policy is going to work for that person. Be open to suggestions and ideas and be collaborative.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the first step. I think a lot of times people just have whatever it is in their mind. They think that this is going to be able to, you know, it's going to affect everybody and it'll work. It's that blanket effect like you're talking about. But they're not taking the time to ask the questions and dig in and understand, you know, other people's point of views, or is this really working for you? Is it not really working for you? And I don't know if it's just because people are too afraid to hear that their ideas aren't good or that it's not working, but be open to feedback and solicit it.
Sure.
Because I think people want to talk about their feelings. They want to talk about if things are working or if they're not working. But in these roles of HR, you got to ask the questions. You got to ask the hard stuff.
Yeah.
And get to the bottom of it before you just come up with a decision that, hey, this should work for everyone, because it doesn't.
I love that. And as you were growing up, you know, especially young in Salt Lake City, Utah, which is predominantly Mormon or members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, very predominant, very Caucasian driven. And, you know, there's kind of a lot of things that are just natural in these kind of communities where you just kind of go along with, you know, the flow of what everything else does. Mm-hmm. And those who are outliers don't always feel welcome or don't feel like they fit in or, you know, or so forth. And I think you and I both had very, you know, untraditional upbringings to what a regular Salt Lake City upbringing might look like, you know, even though everybody has individualized experiences. Tell me a little bit about how you watched your parents navigate through those waters, especially because I think that's, like you said, do we speak up? Do we collectively bring things together? How do we navigate through the challenge of people that cast that type of, you know, blanket over you? You know, how did you watch your parents deal with that, specifically your father? Because I think of my father having to do that, coming from an island in the middle of Fiji, not even stepping foot on, you know, U.S. soil till his mid-20s. And then, you know, coming to Utah of all places, and everybody thought my dad was black, 'cause nobody knows what a Polynesian is, but they don't even know, even deeper than a Polynesian, they don't know what a Fijian is, you know what I mean? Which are very, very dark complex and look African-American. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about that and what you may have learned from your dad, and it kind of, you know, paved the way for all of that.
Yeah. My dad just doesn't give a rat's butt. I tried to censor
myself. Is that from the very beginning?
Yeah, I mean, from the very beginning, I just don't think he really cared what anybody thought about himself, and I know, or thought about him. He, you know, he was married to my mom. They're divorced now.
Yeah.
She's white. My stepmom is Caucasian. And so there were always, I mean, people always had something to say. And my entire life, he would always say, you know, someone's going to disagree with what your view is. They're not going to like it.
Yeah.
And you just got to be yourself.
Yeah.
And if you met my dad, he's, oh man, he is something. He is himself, and he doesn't care what anyone thinks.
Was he like that from the very beginning, coming from Alabama? He just came
absolutely.
In and
he is just 100%, and he doesn't care. And he will tell you exactly how he feels, wrong, right, or indifferent.
Sure.
And it was just always about open communication.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he broke down a bunch of barriers. I mean, he's a cowboy. He's a team roper.
Yeah. I love
it. He's like black cowboy in Utah. He lives in Draper.
It's like him and Karl Malone are the only two in the history of the world.
Yes. Like that's it. And he just didn't care. He's like, I want to ride horses. I want to be a team roper. I'm going to do it. And he has always, always, always pushed that on me.
Yeah.
Like, do not care what anyone thinks, because someone will always have an opinion about you, and they'll disagree and they'll think that what you're doing is wrong, but know what's in your soul, know what you want to do, and just go for it. And he has been, and I think it probably got him into a lot of trouble because he's mouthy, which you know, but at least he spoke his view.
Right.
You know, he spoke his truth. He's an interesting character. And my mom, she's the same way. You know, she's always encouraged us. And I think it was really difficult for her.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, I think maybe she was, I don't know if she'd like me to say this, but I think she was maybe a little bit naive to know what was going to happen when you have these children that are now mixed.
That's exactly right.
And so I think she, along with a lot of people, just didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And it would just
my mom was the same
her
way.
Heart. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we were breaking all sorts of boundaries in Sandy, Utah, growing up Sandy Draper. It was like, you know, I didn't go to the LDS church.
Sure.
I was mixed, and it was just crazy. And so I think my dad didn't care as much. And my mom, she internalized it a lot. And she just, and I hear that a lot with a lot of people in the Caucasian you know, community. Like, I don't know what to do.
Right.
But, you know, all I can do is try and raise my kids to be themselves and have their voice and say, hey, people will come around and they'll end up loving you one way or another.
That's right. My mom always used to say people thought she was the nanny. She'd take all these brown kids around, you know, and it would be like, oh, you must be the. And I think people actually said that to my mother, like, oh, you must be the nanny or you're a. No, I'm their mother.
Yeah.
And I always imagine that thinking, gosh, that would be so hard for my mom to always kind of feel like, listen, my kids don't really look a lot like me. Yeah. You know what I mean? I thought, I wonder how hard that would be. But my mom was a phenomenal mother. Loved my mom. And she was always loving and supportive of my father. And I was just so proud of their relationship as well. And it's like you said, but it was definitely, I can remember at a very young age, it was, you know, uncharted waters in the neighborhood, in the area that we were. We had good neighbors and some good people, but there was also some people that would say things. And I know people at my, you know, my and my parents' work that would say things. Everybody's got an opinion, you know, and there's some old school opinions, especially that early, especially in the Salt Lake Valley where it wasn't as, you know, we had James Jackson on in season one, a close friend of mine, and we went to middle school together in high school. And I've always loved to watch James kind of navigate through, especially diversity and inclusion, some of the things he's doing now. But one of the things he brought up is look at how tremendous the growth has been in diversity in Utah. Yeah. And I can speak as a minority, an ethnic minority here in the Valley, I can see it 100-fold. Right. It feels like there's so many minorities around. In my younger years, it didn't feel like that. And
Absolutely.
So it's pretty exciting to kind of see, even though they're like, you could come and tell me the statistic of saying, you know, maybe, oh gosh, we only have, you know, 13%. But I was going, but I think it was like 0.007 at one time.
Yeah,
so like that's a huge piece of growth. You know what I mean?
Tons of growth. And that is, brings me back to this week, right? Like with the riots and everything that's going on. And I know it's a touchy subject. It's something that really hits home for me, but it's interesting because I watch the riots. I watch what's happening in all the protests in Salt Lake City. And I didn't agree with, you know, the violence and the way that it was going, but I was also, part of me felt a little bit vindicated. Like, oh my gosh, there are all these white people out here in Salt Lake City, Utah, standing up for, you know, what's happening in the world.
That's
and the
right.
George Floyd. And I was shocked. So it's like, while I disagree with the approach, I was like, wow, thank you. Like this would
it's
not have
change.
Happened 20 years ago.
That's
it wouldn't
have
happened 5 years ago.
Sure.
And so I'm proud of our state. I think that we got to give it some credit.
Really interesting, right? So for posterity's sake, when somebody's listening to this podcast 100 years from now, this is the time where, you know, George Floyd was a gentleman who had gone in and had a, you know, a criminal background in the past. And so there's some people that criticize that. So he went in and tried to use a what they believe was a counterfeit $20 bill. I don't even know if it really was or wasn't, but he went in to try and buy something, came out and somebody reported him saying he was using counterfeit money. And the police ended up going in to his vehicle and it was him and a couple other people. And, you know, discussing the situation with him, end up getting out of control. They end up handcuffing him, putting him on the ground. While he was on the ground, they ended up, an officer in Minnesota had put his knee on his neck and pinned him down where he was starting to say, I can't breathe, and cutting off the oxygen levels. And he ended up dying in that scenario. And so a lot of people felt, and there's a lot of outrage over, there were three other officers that were standing there protecting. There were people videotaping this from multiple angles. And the officer, it was on his neck for, I believe, over 8 minutes. I think one of the officers even said that he questioned it and said, I don't know. And he was told, no, this is what we need to do. And he loses his life. And it was a catalyst for rage. And it was rage over police. It was rage. And I it's hard because I also have a great love and respect for the Blue Line and all of the police officers. And I've even had my own run-ins with police officers over the course of my life, sometimes doing knucklehead things and sometimes where I don't feel it was really fair that they would even talk to me or, you know, profile me or whatever it may be. But I'm not big on going and talking about those experiences because it's imperfection. It's bias. It is what it is. And you just learn to live with it and go. But in this specific situation, it seems like this was it. Like it blew up. Like nobody was not going to talk about this. We weren't going to take it. And the people went to the streets. And then I think it got kind of wonky there as well, because I think you had some people that were lawfully protesting and doing the right thing and silently protesting. And I think there were some, you know, depending on the city you were in, it got mixed with some people who wanted nothing to do with the George Floyd, you know, piece. They just wanted to go out and rage against the machine. And that was their entire purpose. And everybody in between. And so I think it was a confusing time from city. So I'm looking at San Diego. I'm looking at Minnesota, New York, you know, all over the country. They're having these protests. I mean, Portland just the other day. And some is good and some is not so good. And it spans everywhere in between. And we don't really know how to handle it. I think we're all kind of going, well, I respect this and I appreciate this, but that's out of order. But then, you know, it's a weird place because everybody's really confused. I think everybody's really angry and we're all just kind of putting out our feelings out there for everybody to share. So for posterity's sake and those who haven't haven't heard this, I want to make sure I provide some context about kind of what we're going to be talking about for the rest of the podcast too, because I think this really opens a door into everything from diversity, from race, yeah. and, you know, and so forth. And is going to open a very open dialogue that Sydney and I will talk about. And, you know, kind of how we navigate through these waters and how we personally feel about it, you know, as people of color and people who are in mixed race families, you know, and not only, you know, my mom is, you know, of this Norwegian and Swedish, you know, background, and my dad's this Fijian and Samoan background, but my wife is of Swiss heritage. And then I've got these Polynesian genes. So I've got my oldest daughter who's been called the N-word, looks just like me, and she's 12 years old. And she doesn't even know what that means. And it breaks your heart that these things happen. And you just think, well, gosh, that's society. Yeah. So how do we, if we really want to see change, what do we need to do? So I guess start off by telling us, Sydney, kind of what, you know, do you remember, well, I guess let's really go back. Do you remember the first time you really ever faced any kind of, whether it be bias or discrimination or something, where it kind of was either confusing or you just went, wait a minute, this is strange. And how did you go about approaching it?
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, there's quite a few that come to mind, which is unfortunate. But I think the very first thing that I remember is being in elementary school and having my hair be made fun of.
Sure.
It was out of control and crazy curly and you know, a little nappy. And it just would escalate from there. And you have nappy hair and da da da. And I remember one kid specifically told me, your hair, you know, he's making fun of my hair. And then what he had said was, that because of the color of my skin, I was going to go to hell. And that's what it said in the Bible.
Wow.
And we're in elementary school. I think I was maybe in second or third grade.
Wow.
And, you know, a second or third grader doesn't know that. They're not reading the Bible.
Sure.
And they may go to, you know, whatever. That's right. You're getting that from your parents. And I just remember going home to my mom, bawling my eyes out. Like, I don't want to have brown skin. Like, I don't want to go to hell. I'm not a bad person.
Yeah.
And I think she didn't even know what to say.
Sure.
I just remember her giving me a hug and saying, you know what? One day everybody's going to wake up and say, I wish I was as tan as you or look like you. And, you know, just hang in there and it will be okay. But that was hard. And it's something that I just still remember feeling just so like, what do you mean? I'm going to go to hell because my skin is brown. Like I just didn't understand as a little kid.
Yeah.
And how do you explain that to a little kid?
Well, hair's a funny one, right? Because I remember being in elementary school and everybody was growing mullets and it was like, cool, let's comb our hair over and bleach it, sun bleach. And I always wanted my hair to be straight. And I remember my mom would get so frustrated with me. She goes, you have beautiful curly hair. Are you kidding me? You have beautiful curly. And my grandmother says, you know what? Every other week I go and get a permanent. I go get my perm so that my hair can look like. And I remember them audibly telling me this all the time, but I hated my hair.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I wanted to look like other people too.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that hair was that thing for you because it was with me too. And it was, and I didn't even remember that until just now where I had this car. I was like, you know, wait a minute. I kind of went down that road as well. So that's what an interesting deal. And so I guess, was that your first kind of marker of, wow, maybe I do look different or feel different? And then it kind of went from there.
Yeah. It was always the hair that was first. I think as little kids, that's what they noticed. And then it was as I got older and, you know, fourth, fifth grade, it was the skin and people would make fun of me and they would say things. I didn't go to the church that most people did in the neighborhood. So I kind of had lots of strikes going against
me. Sure, right. Absolutely.
And so was, you know, and then on top of that, my parents were divorced at that time. And so I'm living in.
How old were you when they divorced?
Oh. Two, maybe.
Oh, and that just stacks on, huh?
Yeah, so my whole life, pretty much. And so I, you know, in this neighborhood living with my mom, and I don't look like anybody else.
Sure.
I don't go to the same church as anybody else.
Yeah.
And I just remember crying to my mom, like, I want to go to church and I don't want to be brown.
Yeah.
And she would be like, what do you mean you want to go to church? Like, talk to me about what that means.
Sure.
And at 8 years old, everybody's getting baptized.
Yeah, right.
Utah, and I wasn't.
Yeah.
And I just begged her and begged her and begged her. And she was like, listen, Sydney, when you're 18, if you want to get baptized, I will be there. I will, you know, whatever you want to do. But I'm not, you know, her opinion was that I
do it for the right reasons.
Do it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad that she did that. I ended up, you know, a different path. But I'm glad she made me wait. And it was difficult. It was hard not being like everybody else. But I think it made me stronger in the end.
When did you feel you were comfortable being, you know, an African-American woman?
Oh, this is sad to admit, but probably not until the last few years.
Sure.
Yeah. I think that for so long, I just didn't know where I fit in on either side because I felt like, you know, I didn't look like anyone that was Black,
yeah.
You know, and I, you know, would get criticized from that side as well. You're not Black enough. And I didn't look like anyone that was white. And so it was really hard for me to identify. I didn't know where to identify. And I just remember, you know, growing up and you take the test, you know, and it like, you know, in middle school,
yeah, high of course.
School, and you mark your race. And up until recently, they would say two or more races.
Sure.
But there was always like white or Black. And so through high school, I never knew what to put. And it would hurt me. Like I would just stare at this and people would laugh and they would joke and ask, you know, like, oh, what do you put on the test? And I'm like, you know, I don't know.
I just don't mark it.
I don't know what it was. And I don't know if there was any, I think with age you start to, I think maybe I started to take my dad's advice and just not care what people thought about me.
Yeah.
And I think that came with more life experiences. Yeah. And it was like, you know, one of the questions I would get asked all the time is, what are you?
Yeah.
And it would
American
rage would come when people asked me that. And it was like, I'm a woman. I'm a human.
I always answer American. They're like, what are you? I'm an American.
It's like, you know, and I don't know the right way to ask. So I guess that's probably.
Well, I always know what they're getting at when they ask. Because I think it's almost, sometimes I think it's a trap question, but people will ask me and they're like, what are you? And I always look at them dead in their eye and say, oh, I'm American. And they're like, and I'm like, anything else? Yeah, it's kind of like, what were you getting at? You know what I mean?
Because
it is, it's a fun way to do it. But it's because exactly, you're right. I mean, I can always say, well, I'm Polynesian. And I say, I take a lot of pride in being Polynesian. But at the same time, you know, I've got my mother's side that I'm very proud of. I mean, like my grandfather and my grandmother were like another set of parents. They're my best friends in the world and raised me. And I just have such a deep love and reverence for them and everybody in their genealogy. And so you're exactly right. That's a tough thing to put down is... Yeah. You know, and I think a lot of people don't even see it through those eyes because it was very interesting when you said that. I was like, gosh, when people are filling out a Scantron form, how many people have that moment where they have to sit and think about that?
Yeah,
that's like writing your name, right? Like, well, I'm writing my name, I don't know, I'm Hawaiian, whatever. Did go?
Yeah,
and you're actually it brings a physical reaction to you.
Yeah,
and how crazy that is, right?
I never knew what to put and if I was going to offend something. And if I put Black, then would my mom feel like her entire family? Because I'm 50% her too.
Yeah.
So like, would it be offensive to them that I'm not acknowledging, you know, that lineages and my dad as well? And so it's just hard. And so I think life experiences is what got me to a place now where I just don't care.
Sure.
Like,
do you see yourself really?
I am, and like I love the thing that I probably love about myself the most is that I am mixed race.
Yeah,
and that I don't identify with either or. I don't think.
Yeah,
you know, usually it's just I love being mixed.
You're an American.
Yeah,
you're like me. Me and Carl, we're American. Can you put that on there, please?
Yes, because it served me well, and like you know, the experiences growing up with different cultures, and now I see. That it has made me better in my career.
Yeah.
And it's propelled me forward. And so I have a hard time identifying with one or the other.
Yeah.
I don't know how to answer.
No, that's good. You know? So when you look at it too, right now, so you move into your career. Mm-hmm. How do you think just that kind of that reality has helped you really leverage a lot of the things you see in the workplace when it comes to, you know, the whole discussion around identity or, you know, especially with LGBTQ movements and, you know, like I said, the whole race piece and diversity in general, inclusion. How has kind of your journey really helped position you to be able to empower the leaders that are around you from an HR standpoint, help educate employees and so forth? What do you feel that you've been able to do from your experience that's been able to help them to see things a different way or be able to act a different way or be able to kind of gain new experiences?
Yeah, I think it's just being open with your story.
Yeah.
For some reason, I just feel like that always solves problems is when you can share experiences with people. And so a lot of times I'm the only person that's a minority and a woman. And, you know, so you're going in.
Yeah, minority on multiple levels, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it's just being open and being honest and being able to say, hey, this is what's happened to me. And, you know, maybe let's just try and think of this in a different way.
Yeah.
And not being afraid to have a voice and to speak up and share my experiences with different leaders in the organization. And usually what I get back is like, oh, wow, hey, you know, that really made me change my view on this. And yeah, we do need more diversity in here. Or, yes, we do need this. Or, oh, we shouldn't say these kinds of things. And so being open and sharing other people's stories and my own is what I think has helped me in my career.
You know, what's interesting is you bring that up, and I've never thought of this, at least not that I can remember, is being multiracial would be such an advantage when it comes to, you know, kind of really teaching these kinds of characteristics to people, or being able to help them to see things through a different light, because you're doing it your entire life. Yeah. I've never really thought about that. Is, you know, like my father, and we were talking a little bit before we jumped on the podcast, my father has always been very liberal in his thinking. And a lot of that comes, and very socialistic, because he comes from an island in a village where you have to take care of one another, and you'll all, you know, get your produce and your, you know, your building materials or whatever, and you'll split it between the group. And you always want to make sure, you know, in Hawaii, we always saying, you know, no child left behind, nobody left behind, no family member left behind. Nobody gets left behind. Everybody is in it. And it's almost a way of socialism in its most beautiful, raw form. And so I totally get that. I'm always like, listen, my dad always gives back to the community. He loves to give, you know, money or resources or visit or ideas or whatever. He's a very giving human being. But he always wants to make sure everybody's taken care of. And so it's, you know, even though he's a very business savvy individual, he's very, you know, much wanting to say, listen, CEOs should make money, but let's remember the little guy that's making all this. And so he wants to balance it out by still keeping the integrity. Say, yeah, but we need to celebrate the CEO because they're taking the risk, or the owners. And but he always wants to try and keep things as even as they can so that everybody feels included, right? And that's something that was taught to me at a young age. And so I'd always look at it. But my mom, her viewpoints are very conservative. And that's, she was raised in a conservative society. Her father, well, you know, is a very successful optometrist for over 50 years. She was raised in a nice, really, you know, really nice area substantially. And it's not that, and my mom, I mean, she chose one of the most admirable professions in the world, which is being a nurse. And she's been an extremely successful nurse. And so I don't say this in terms of my mom didn't get it, but my mom's, the way that my mom was raised and her ideals and values and so on growing up were, I think, different than the way that my dad perceived the world growing up. And that really manifests itself through my youth because whenever they'd take a stand on something, you'd see a lot of times they'd agree. You know, they weren't like, it was always my dad was super, super left and my mom was super, super right. You know, on some things they were really divided, but other things you just see the difference between them. And it molded me where, gosh, I would play almost a devil's advocate with my own brain. Like, 100%. Am I on this side? I see what mom's saying. Oh, and I see what dad's saying. Right. And then I kind of tried to find a middle ground, or I tried to choose a side based on where I educated. But that's where you're listening to two different viewpoints, two different life experiences, two different cultures, and you're trying to mesh them together. And now I'm receiving the information from those two discussions and now formulating my opinion and my views and my values and my strategy based on that. And I'm having to do that every single day since I'm a little boy.
Since the day you've been born, you've had to kind of play that line.
Yeah, and figure that out, where as a lot of people might not. And going back, I don't think my dad ever had to do that growing up.
Yeah.
Because it was just that was his way of thinking. That's his parents and everybody else around their way of thinking. My mom never really had to do that as much. Obviously, they had their independent brains and they went and did their own things. But when it came to that, you know, that far a swing in the polls, they didn't have to go down that line and figure that out. I didn't realize that until you said it. It's just, you know, we're being raised by having to look at things through two different viewpoints. So when we go try to teach others in the workplace or in our professional interests, we've already been going through this, and we're trying to teach other people to look at it from, okay, you're now the Caucasian person, the person not, you know, not of color, looking at it from an African-American person or another person of color's viewpoint.
Yeah.
We've been doing this the entire time in our own lives. Let us show you some things to consider while you're formulating your own independent opinion.
Yeah.
But this is kind of the model we use. Would you agree?
Yeah, 100%. I think that is really what's wrong with what's happening in the world, is that there hasn't been a lot of diversity and people end up hanging out with people that look just like them.
Yeah.
And then something like George Floyd happens. You've never in your life had to cross a bridge and kind of, you know, bring those things together like you and I have, right? Like that's what we've had.
Well, just internally in our own homes.
Like in our own homes, And so they don't have a lot of people, I don't think that they have the tools. They haven't been taught the tools how to do that. I mean, you haven't had to.
Yeah.
You surround yourself with people that are like you.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you don't know how to reach out and figure out how to have dialogue with people that have a completely different culture or mindset or upbringing. It doesn't even have to be with, you know, it doesn't have to be race. It's religion too.
Yep.
It could be anything.
Absolutely.
Right? So I think diversity is so important, because if without that, you can't bridge the gap.
And I think it's funny, because I've always had the opinion, I've said this on multiple podcasts, I say it in presentations, it's not only about diversity in skin color, diversity in gender, it's about diversity in thought.
Absolutely.
Diversity in opinion. Because you can have somebody who is, you know, any kind of ethnic minority, and somebody's cooking, you're raised under the same exact circumstance, you're going to think exactly the same way. So while, you know, you'd hope that some other people would experience, I think that's really the goal we're trying to get out of diversity.
Yes, isn't the,
like I said, it's not the color or your skin. Like I said, if you're LGBTQ or you're, you know, identify as straight, whatever it is, I don't think any of that, I mean, you would probably guess the statistics show that that would mean you have a different backstory and have gone through different experiences.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I think we're looking for, I vest way more in the diversity in thoughts and opinions, because that's what we want brought to the table. We want to look
Absolutely.
At it from all these different angles. You know, there's a sports commentator, a sports media personality named Colin Cowherd. Mm-hmm. Colin Cowherd's a really, you know, awesome sportscaster. I listen to his podcast all the time. And there's one thing that he said a few years ago that has stuck with me that I think is one of the greatest quotes that he shares. And he says, you know, I just look around. He goes, and I listen. He listens to a lot of media as well as he produces his show and gets it together. And he says, it seems like we're in a world today that values, that they're seeking affirmation instead of information.
Yes.
We're looking around trying to find people that are similar to us or have our same story to support what we feel, versus going out and finding information to make educated decisions. We're trying to find people
right.
who side with us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether I wake up in the morning and I read the Deseret News because I said, well, that's, you know, owned by the church and it viewpoints are more like ours. And then I'll read the Tribune and it's like, well, that's more, it takes shots at the church. But I think we need to be able to tolerate that and listen to another viewpoint and say, it's okay if we disagree. That's fine.
Yes.
And it's almost welcome. I mean, I follow AOC and I've talked about this on this podcast. I follow AOC in the House, who represents New York, and people go, oh man, Ocasio-Cortez, she's off her rocker. She's up there talking crazy talk. But I love to listen to what she says. Sometimes she really is out there in space, but other times I'm like, I've never thought about it that way. You know, and I might not agree, but I've never even looked at it from that angle to make a good educated decision on what I want to be. And I think we need to create a world of free thinkers.
Yeah.
You know, instead of this, we're going to, you know, whether it be a political party or a religious affiliation and so on, I think we need to be strong to be able to say, let's go out and gather all the information that we can and let's make good educated decisions. And that's how we need to run, you know, kind of run our day to day. And
yeah.
that's where I think, going back to your point, we may lack a little bit. We seek the affirmation, not the information.
Yeah, and we need that, because at the end of the day, we're all here on this world together. We yeah. bleed the same. And so you can't, what are we going to do? You can't just push away everybody that doesn't think like you.
Yeah.
You know, and that just causes exactly what we're seeing happening in the world, and more divide and more controversy. And instead of going out and just saying, hey, you know, like, why does it matter that someone thinks about something different than
sure.
you? I just don't understand.
Yeah, how does that affect you personally?
How does that affect me that you have a different political view? I mean, I guess we could get into it and say, oh, you know, the economics and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, like, to my day-to-day life, because you voted for this person, and I voted for somebody else, or because, you know, why does it matter? Or because I worship a different way than you. Like, how does that affect me at all?
That's exactly right.
And just appreciate our differences, because I think that that is really what humanity is. Like, if we were all the same, it would be boring.
Yeah, but you know, I think it also makes you insane, because you're burning all this energy fighting against something that really doesn't affect you. I mean, at the end of the day, like you said, in the day-to-day, I look at our current president. You know, whether you're for him or whether you're against him, there's a lot of people that spend a lot of energy taking shots at him, you know, and just saying, listen, like I said, I'm not saying it's right or wrong not to do that, but man, just think about it. If you took that energy and really put it toward a great solution, or you'd probably be happier.
Yeah.
You know, I think it would be really tough to have burn that much energy on something that you feel is controlling you, that probably doesn't really have an influence on your day to day.
Yeah. And I just understand this, like the keyboard killers out there.
Yeah, that's right. The keyboard warriors.
Yeah. The keyboard warriors.
Yeah.
It's like, why, what is that going to do? You know,
Twitter gangsters.
Yeah. The Twitter gangsters. You're just pushing your ideology out there.
Yeah.
And you want people to support it. But really, do you think the people that think differently than you are all of a sudden going to read your post and think, oh my gosh, Carl got it right.
I'm changing.
Like, no, that's not what's going to happen. That's not how you change minds. That's not how you solve problems.
Yeah.
Is saying, oh, you've got it completely wrong. It has to be compromise.
That's right.
And that is how it is. I mean, look at marriage, relationships.
Yep.
It's all about compromise.
Amen.
Having a 3-year-old, all about compromise. Okay. Right. It's all about negotiation.
Oh, yeah, it is.
And so just take that on a larger scale. You have to compromise together to get anything done.
Yeah. So how do you feel? You know, we go through this whole George Floyd piece, start protesting all around. you've been, I mean, really, I mean, raised in this land, right? In this city, in this area, in this state. And, you know, here in Utah, you know, we had this peaceful protest that kind of spiraled out of control, and they end up flipping over police cars, lighting them on fire. Guy shows up with a bow and arrow and starts pointing at people. And I don't know if he fired off shots, but then everybody marches up to the Capitol and starts spray painting. That hurt my heart, because that was like a symbol of my state, which I hold near and dear to my heart.
Right.
Start spray painting all these things on there. And then you just watch social media. And I've said in the last couple of days, social media in my world has kind of gone down a tube, and I don't want to watch anymore. It seems like every time I open it up, I'm seeking information, but it's just filled with all of this rage, which some of it, and like I said, I never want to discourage anybody from sharing their voice, because that's mandatory. And there is rage and there is hurt, and those things need to be shared. But sometimes it's just a lot when you're trying to figure your own emotions out to go to that. So tell me about kind of how you felt. All this kind of happens, and we have the George Floyd moment, and I think it kind of took a toll on everybody, and everybody kind of took a step back and thought about it. Tell me about your initial impression, and what over the last handful of days, kind of maybe what your mind has gone through, and, you know, kind of how you tune up and, you know, kind of chewed up all this information, and maybe even how you've maybe even changed your opinion as you've gone along and where you're at today.
Yeah, I definitely have changed my opinion, and I've felt torn, really, because part of me understands the rage and the riots and everything that's going out there, the hurt that comes along with this, because you see this man and you see what happens to him, and it's happened over and over and over again, and not a lot changes. And so it's just this intense pain. So I get it. I understand, you know, we've been isolated. I think that is a huge part of it.
Absolutely. This COVID thing, not communicating with one another, being on our own, and then having this happen is just like, holy cow, it's just a time bomb waiting to take off.
Yeah. So Josh, my fiance, he was saying, you know, in prison, they put you in solitary confinement.
Yeah.
And that's like the worst thing ever. And people lose their minds. And now we've essentially been in solitary confinement in our own homes, you know, and then these really emotionally charged things happen and people go freaking nuts.
Yeah.
So it's years of hurt and pain watching it. And then you add everything, you know, being locked up at home. And so I see it, I understand it, I disagree with it, it's hard. You know, but this last week I've had to take my own advice, which is do something.
Yeah.
Like, what am I going to do? And I get on social media too, and I see all these posts, and I've written so many.
Yeah, right? That's right.
Like, I'm going to tell you.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
I'm like, he's not going to change his mind. She's not going to change his mind. Like, this isn't going to do anything. And so I've been racking my brain all week. What can I do? What can I do? What can I do? And as you can tell, because I've said it probably five different times on this podcast already, the power of storytelling is huge.
Yeah.
I think that's what brings people together. And
absolutely.
So I, you know, this week my whole thing has been how can I make a difference? And the only way that I know how is to try and give people a platform to talk about their experiences.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about your ideology. It doesn't really matter what you view. I want to talk about how you got there.
Yeah, that's right. I agree with
and, that. And so I started reaching out to different people in this community that I just know have very different views and very different experiences. And I had this idea, well, hey, all I know I can do that I can help is try and give people a voice to share that story, because, you know, my belief is that it will heal. And so,
and I love that you say that story, because they're all so individual. Like you said, you know, it's not an affirmation thing. Like, okay, here's what I believe in. Let's go get everybody that feels positively about this situation. Let's get them all in a room. It's, hey, let's bring people from all walks of life, and let's now expose them to other people so people can see it from many different angles and then be able to gain that information.
Yeah, exactly. So because you were on that list that I called, and it's, you know, I called and said, hey, I've got this idea. I want to have a town hall, if you will, and bring people together with every different background, lots of different experiences, just to share their story and to have a healthy dialogue.
Yeah.
And if all that I get out of this, and it could go wrong, who knows, we'll see.
Sure.
But if all I can do for our community here in Salt Lake is one, highlight some people that have, you know, have very different stories, give them a platform to tell them, and two, prove to myself and to the people that I love that we can have conversations about really hard stuff, and it does not need to end in, you're racist, I hate you, you know, and cop cars burning and just, you know, a shit show, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, we can have hard conversations and be okay.
Yeah.
Still love one another. And so it's kind of evolved into this big thing. Now I've got all these people that have signed up and they're ready. And so we're, you know, and you're going to come and join.
Yeah.
And I don't know how else to help. But sitting behind a keyboard is not going to do anything. And I have such a strong feeling about that. I see it and it just hurts my heart. And so I don't think that my post or my, you know, picture or hashtag is going to do anything at all.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that, because I've been in your shoes too, where I've wanted to say, I'm a very emotional person, whether that be anger or crying or laughing, I'm an emoter. I go through emotions really heavy. And I've done the same thing where I've typed out a post and then deleted it and typed it up again and put it in other places and then read something and wanted to respond and then deleted it. Actually responded 10 seconds later, delete it. You know what I mean? I just, I've gone through all those things too, but I feel very similar to you. And for those that have been posting, like I said, I don't want to make you feel or make people feel like they don't, you know, their voice doesn't matter.
Right.
Or that if you are posting in the affirmation, like I know I've seen people that say, you know, it's been too long. You know, my wife posted and said, I've never understood white privilege till I was married to Carl. And then we've gone through some of these experiences where I've seen, holy cow, this is pretty crazy. And she shared her voice. And I appreciate stuff like that. I love it. I love people that are having these self-reflections, realizations that, but then sometimes I also see that, you know, it's kind of like, okay, well, good. I'm glad now everybody's using the hashtag Black Lives Matter and using the box and black, you know, the Blackout Tuesday and all this stuff. And that's all good and fine and dandy. But there needs to come a time where we start to pivot. And we need to be able to say, that's not enough. Like, that's great. And I'm grateful that people are having those realizations. I'm glad that I have the realization. Because like I said, I'm just a human like anybody else. But now I've always challenged people, what are you doing with it? Like, what if, since you found out, since you've had this ideation, since you've, you know, kind of, you know, come to this conclusion that, man, Black lives do matter. Minorities do matter. The LGBTQ, we're in LGBTQ's month, right?
Yep.
What, they matter. All of these things. And, you know, I don't want to take away from the All Lives Matter piece too, because all lives do matter. But today we're focused on one specific situation. So it's not that, you know, all lives, it's not that Black Lives Matter more. This happens to be the topic that we're identifying right now. And I'm great with that, but it needs to go so much further than that. It can't be, well, I'm going to post affirmation. That's positive. I appreciate that. But then I really challenge everybody listening to this podcast. What are you doing for the minority community to now advance support of the African-American community specifically, and then go from there to say, okay, now what other, you know, groups or, you know, whatever could we tear off of that and kind of use that same ideation to set them up for success. And I've gone back and forth through direct messaging sources with a couple of people that I find that are very influential. And I said, you know what, I think you need to, I love that Sydney came in and was chatting about this whole deal, you know, bringing people together and having these conversations. I said, I think that's the first step, is actually getting people in touch with one another and sitting and talking about these things. And I said, and the next thing is, I think the most powerful human beings on the face of the earth tomorrow will be human resources departments, because we are the ones that can now control the narratives within our own workspaces, where a lot of, where we do have control. We don't have control in the communities all the time. We can try and fix those things and influence them. Community leaders can do a lot of their politics, but we have a direct influence on the way that our relationships go within our own four walls of our buildings. How can we influence that for good? What are we doing to change the narrative there? What are we doing to educate people, bring people together, highlight it, celebrate it, talk to people, bring tools in they need, but also take things, and you and I were discussing this a little bit before we got on, you know, I mean, look at our policies, look at our procedures. And I've talked about this in podcasts in the past. Yeah. You know, what do we look at with degrees, you know, college degrees? Yeah. And listen, I don't have a college degree, and people can say, well, you, it's just because you don't have a college degree. It's not where I'm coming from. You know, even if I did have one, I want a college degree. Listen, I'm envious of college degrees. Yeah, I don't think they're not needed.
I don't have one either.
I love the education. You know, I go to Westminster, you know, I go on and off from semester to semester. I value education. I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying is, if you are in a leadership position and have influence over the policies and procedures within your organization, and I'm going to go ahead and call this out right now. So in Salt Lake City, we have a mayor who has been very vocal, and Erin Mendenhall's new, she comes in and says, you know, I really want to support this movement and so on, and gives it in this town square. And I love the things that she's saying, right? Like, well, I want to be inclusive and all this. She takes a knee, you know, and so on. And I disagree with some of the things she's done with the police department and kind of, you know, checking them instead of kind of, you know, supporting them as well, because we need to support both sides. But one of the things I thought was very interesting about the city, they put up an HR position just recently on their website, mm-hmm. and it came through my feeds or somebody told me about it, and I saw it because I always like to share these jobs with other HR professionals. So I was reading through the criterion, and sure enough, it says your requirement is having a college degree. Now, I want to question those for our listeners and especially for those people that are influential. I want you to go look at the data. And I want to know what the data says for people that are Caucasian. How many people that are Caucasian graduate with a 4-year college degree, especially in human resources? But number two, I want you to tell me, just in general degrees alone, how many African Americans that are in the workforce have a 4-year degree today?
Yeah.
And we need to look at that. Yeah. And we need to be able to attack that and say, listen, if there's a lot that's right there, there's a privilege,
yeah.
right? If you have access to that, and I didn't have access to that, whether I was a single parent home or we didn't have the money or I had challenges or whatever it may have been, that we need to be able to open that door and say, well, what's saying that Carl Sokia over here, who's had 15 years of executive HR experience, wouldn't be qualified for an HR manager position with the city? Because what if I applied, I'd be automatically kicked out.
Automatically kicked out.
So doesn't matter about my experience. Doesn't matter about what I bring to the table, how I could contribute. And I've shared this in this frustration in other episodes, specifically when I talk about careers. But those are the kind of things when instead of just posting it, if you're in a position of influence, go get with a congressman. Tell them to change the laws. Relook at the policies and procedures in your workplace. Look at what you're doing in your communities, your church groups, your whatever it may be. What are you doing to start looking at these things? And I don't think they went and posted it on purpose. I don't think I'm not saying that, Aaron Mendenhall or the city or whoever it is went out and said, well, guess what? We're going to go find a Caucasian. And that's not what they're doing. Yeah. But I think we're not looking at those things. And I think we need to address them.
Well, it's the little micro layers of things in our society that are causing, the lack of diversity. And it's exactly like this. Your example of college degree is perfect. And nobody's looking at that, right?
Yeah.
So African Americans aren't going to and graduating at the same rate as Caucasians.
Yeah.
So when companies go to hire and they have that, criteria that you have to have your degree, you're automatically going to not get as much diversity into you're just eliminating a whole group of people. And so I think obviously there's certain careers where you have to have a degree, especially.
Yeah, of course. I don't want to go get surgery, but somebody who hasn't gone through medical school.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But
that's not going to work.
Experience, life experience. And at what point is that going to add some value and credence to what you can bring to the table?
That's right. And it even goes back to, like I say, about leadership skills in growing people in your workplace, and this is a problem we have everywhere. It's inherent. Is we take the great individual contributor and think, okay, we're just going to make them now the leader, and they're going to have all the skills. Or we say you worked for X company and had X title, that's going to make you a great leader. And we're not looking at what Josh Burson, who I really love, calls power skills. And it's a lot of these old soft skills. And it's a lot of how do you relate? What's your executive presence look like? Are you mindful? Or all these things we're not even taking into account, which we really need to look at, which is another side marker. And some people might have that in spades that are not great individual contributors, but they can be a great leader. You don't have to be a player to be a football coach, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You can be a great mind and a great coach and inspire championship after championship and never have played a football down in your life. That's kind of the way I look at it in business is you don't have to be a great individual contributor to be a great leader. I mean? Some of the greatest leaders in the world weren't the individual contributors. And some of the greatest individual contributors weren't great leaders.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Because you can be so fantastic at your day-to-day job, but that doesn't mean, you're checking off all your tasks. But that doesn't mean that you can sit down and have a conversation with an employee about how to get them to the next level and how to have, all this stuff with COVID is coming up. And so if you're a great leader, can you have that dialogue with these, with the people that are working for you and coming up with solutions I totally agree with you.
Yeah. And I've said this in my public presentations. I would say, you want to find a good business mind, go find a drug dealer. Because drug dealers have to find their corner. They got to find staff. They got to source product. They got to have margins.
Yes. And I said, hey, look at Jay-Z. I'm just going to say, you can say what you want about him all day long, but the man started selling crack and look at him now.
Yeah, exactly right. Because they've got to do it all in secrecy. Yes. They've got to do it around. And I'm like, these guys have brilliant minds, but a lot of them feel like they can never go that route because they don't have a formal education or they dropped out in junior high or whatever it may be, but they have savvy. They've got business savvy. You know what I mean? So I'm not promoting.
sad point, sad part about that is then they get arrested, they go to prison, they get a felony, and then they get out, and you've got these brilliant minds who really do know that would be, you know, add great value to your organization. But they can't get a job because they have a felony.
You know, let's go back to the getting talent back to work, which is episode two.
Getting talent back to
but
work.
I mean, that's a whole nother thing that I'm on a pedestal. But there's another one is how many people, you know, how many people of color and especially African-American community have gone through the, you know, the prison system and received felonies, no matter what they're for, and are trying to get back into the workforce. And is that a barrier that we're setting up? But like I said, I don't think all these things are done out of spite. I think they've been done, and now we need to go back and take a look at them and say, if we really want to make a difference, if we really want to create change like we say we do, we need to make these things happen. We can talk about it. We need to be about it. And that's, I try to stay out of a lot of these conversations, and it's not because I want to be quiet. It's just because I'd rather take all that energy and time doing and trying to make the difference than talking about the difference, which there's nothing wrong with talking, because I also have a lot of respect for the people that talk about it and promote it and get us excited about it and inspire. That's a very big thing too.
Okay. That is very different. Those are influential people that are out there really using their voice to make a change and a difference and bring them in. Right. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to do with this entire thing,
which
I
love,
is bring people in and have a voice. It is the people that all they're doing is writing a post here and there once in a while. Like that's not going to, I mean, use your voice, and your voice can do things. You can invoke change with your voice.
Yeah.
But it's about how you do it.
I love it. So next steps with you. So you've got this great, you know, gang, you know, group of people. You know, what do you want to see out of this? For all those listeners, you know, that can inspire, we're going to air this, immediately. And get the word out. But I mean, we'll set a date and we'll set a time, and people can find you to kind of get that stuff all tied in. All the details need to get nailed down. But, you know, what are you looking for out of all this? And how would you ask people to spread the word and just kind of get the idea out there? So once you really get those logistics in place, people can know what to expect and how to participate and how they can contribute and so forth.
Yeah, the biggest thing for me is I want to show people how to have that healthy dialogue and healthy conflict. And so that they can then apply it into their lives and then see, okay, yeah, I can have these conversations at home. Because I think what's going to really make a difference is these small little things here and there, these small conversations, and they start to add up and add up and add up. And, you know, so to be honest with you, I wish I could say I have this huge call to action after. Yeah. But for me right now, I think it's just about showing and being, you know, it's about being able to prove to myself and to our community that we can do it differently.
I love that.
And being able to look at things and say, hey, I'm wrong.
Yeah.
And show people, you know, I've got a lot of people that I think are really great influencers within the state of Utah.
Yeah.
And I want to hear them admit something like, yeah, maybe I was wrong. And I think that that's what we need to do to make change going forward.
I love that. So you're going to take a bunch of Fijians and a bunch of Norwegians and make some Fiji-weegians.
Yeah,
right?
That's what I'm going to do.
I mean, that's what we really need to do, is take people from different viewpoints. And that's really what I try to do with this podcast. And I say it time and time again, is the whole purpose of this podcast is I try to find stories that inspire me, obviously, and that I learn from, human beings that I value and that I've learned from and I look up to, but also that have very unique stories that are so different across the span of life. You know, and it doesn't, like I said, that's not a gender thing. It's not a race thing. It's just more of an experiential thing. What have they experienced? What story do they have to tell? But then you as a listener have that valuable opportunity. You don't need to go out and meet people, I mean, which is another great thing to hear their stories. That's why I love like Humans in New York. Pitch for Humans in New York. If you don't follow that Instagram page, one of the greatest, because all they do is go around and just a photographer goes out and gets the stories of people and posts them all the time. And you learn these great backstories of these great human beings that are like in parks and all over the place, all over the world. Really neat deal. But this is, I mean, modeled almost in the same vein, which I found out about that after. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's kind of what I've been doing. But that whole piece is really, really beautiful, because that in this podcast, I just want to give people a different view. I want the people that were raised in Salt Lake to hear about the kid from South Central in Tango Towns who would have never, ever had to experience that themselves, right? I want them to hear the story about Chris Anderton, who lost his son to suicide after getting bullied. And I want them to hear the story of Josh Berkman, you know, who's gone out and had to, you know, persevere through a UFC experience, but also had a spiritual, you know, kind of uprising while he was rehabilitating and using all these natural, you know, ways to kind of restore his body. I want him to hear about Matt Martinez, our good friend, you know, and how he really had to use this determination and grit to get where he's been in the business world outside of athletics. I want them to hear these angles so that they can see that even though we're so different, we're also tied together in so many ways. We have so many things in common, but there's not always the one map to get there. Not everybody has to have the same ideals to be good human beings and be on the same page. Yeah. And that's kind of what I've tried to do with all this. So I really have a great deal of respect that you're trying to do that in our community and trying to get everybody to kind of share those stories. And it's not just an affirmation thing or saying this is a Black Power movement or whatever it may be, or, you know, Black Lives Matter movement or whatever it is. It's, I just want people to come together and be able to have those discussions, have opposition, but know that it's okay to disagree. It's okay to look at things from different angles.
Yeah. And just, and be a catalyst for that. And hopefully, if that's all I get out of it, you know, is that one person was able to say to themselves, like, wow, hearing that story really changed my life, changed my perspective, or opened my eyes to something that I didn't realize, then it's a win for me.
I love that.
And if I can get through a day of talking about race, religion, and politics at work, and unconscious biases and tension between police officers and civilians without it turning into a fight, then that is proof that we are moving in the right direction. And I need people to see that. I want to provide a platform that's positive, but is also addressing the problems. And so I'm asking everybody that's coming to this, like, don't just, yeah, it's not about, like you said, it's not about your views. It's about your story.
Yeah.
And, you know, come with an idea of a solution, and it can be a crappy one.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's one thing that anyone who has worked with me in the HR world, they know.
Yeah.
You can come and complain all you want to me, but you are not leaving my office without an idea to fix the problem.
Right.
And people just know that about me. And that is how I'm approaching this entire thing. Like, we can't start talking about solutions if we don't talk about it in a healthy dialogue. There'll be no solution, right?
Yeah.
Unless we start just having conversations, respectful ones.
I love
and
that.
And so that's it. And so hopefully, you know, who knows? Maybe there'll be some great ideas. I've got brilliant minds coming together from all walks of the earth, and that's how, you know, change happens. And so maybe something will, you know, some great idea will come out of it.
Yeah.
Who knows? If not, you know, at least showing that we can do this.
You're trying to make change. That's what matters.
Trying to make change.
That's right. That's right.
I'm trying to inspire people to have healthy conversations.
Yeah. Give the listeners a little bit of an idea. Some of the people that you're going to have and some of the, you know, backgrounds and places they come from, so they can get a kind of a good sample.
Yeah, definitely. So you, obviously.
Oh, then that's all we need.
Yeah,
so that's been the podcast.
Mic drop. When I got a yes from you, I was like, oh, it's done. We're good.
My people, I'd go anywhere. You just tell me where to be and I'm there.
So you're going to be fantastic. Let's see. Dave Acosta, he's a police officer. And I don't know.
That'd be great.
Him?
Yeah.
He's fantastic.
Yeah, great guy.
I've got Matt Martinez, Elisa Garn, Steven Sylvester, Tango has agreed to
Tango Towns. Listen back to his episode.
James from Blue Novus, he's going to come and moderate.
James Hadlock, great.
James Hadlock, he's fantastic.
Yep.
And so I'm
Love
super
James.
Excited about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those are just some of the, like, big names here. I'm trying,
I love it.
Thank you.
That'll be great. Well, it'll be great because, like you said, a lot of people from different backgrounds, different walks of life, kind of coming to talk about life. And hopefully to bridge a lot of things, too, because I think there's a lot of people that are just confused, that want to say something, that want to do something, don't know where to start. I guess that's where I'll kind of leave it with you is, if you had any advice for those people that are out there right now with itchy Twitter fingers that want to get involved, right? That go out and say, I'd love to talk about it. I want to show my support. What change can they make? And what would you tell them, you know, kind of, you know, from somebody, a person of color, to be able to say, what can I do to help the cause? What advice would you have for them?
I would say, you know, look at your network of people. Mm-hmm. And do they all look like you?
Yeah.
The people that you have surrounding you have the same views as you. And I would say that people are probably going to say yes to that.
Sure.
So I would challenge, you know, reach out to someone who's different. Yeah. Ask how you can help.
I love that.
If you have people in your network that are a little bit different, reach out. Say, hey, you know what? I know that maybe you're hurting. Like, will you tell me why? You know, what experiences do you have that is making this so difficult for you? Like, listen to other people's stories. And I think it's just all about that dialogue, the healthy dialogue, and reaching out and saying, you know, trying to make your little world that you have, you know, a little bit more diverse and bring more people into it. And I think that that's the first step that we can do. Just start with a little love and new connections.
I love that. And I just want to, you know, kind of piggyback on what Sydney just shared. And it's we can make a difference. Go out and build a relationship with somebody new. Go to lunch and sit. When you go to lunch, which everybody does, go sit socially distanced, of course.
Yeah.
Sit next to somebody you know that you haven't sat by and get to know them, or you know, join, you know, add somebody on, you know, your social media channels that you don't traditionally follow and try to understand life through their eyes. You know what I mean? There's a lot of great people out there that share different stories and they have different walks of life that you can learn from, whether it be on your LinkedIn profile or it be a Twitter, or whether it be, you know, like I said, any form of social media, Facebook, Instagram, on down the line, Snapchat, you know, whatever it is, TikTok right now. I mean, just even watching people try to, you know, inspire and lift people up through TikTok dancing, you know, try to just, you know, and if you don't use TikTok, well, there's your chore. Go and download TikTok and start to understand the younger generation, you know, or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Try to diversify your opinions and your ideas and so on. I really agree with what you say, but then go out and try to be the change.
Yeah.
If it's in your workplace, be the one that starts the committee that reviews your policies and your programs.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about your, you know, your diversity and inclusion program. Talk about how you, you know, you vet people for promotions and how you have kind of this backlog. If somebody were to leave or be promoted, how do you backfill their role? What kind of management trainee positions do you have? You know, what, like I said, all these different things. It doesn't take an HR person or a senior leader to start that. It can be somebody that is in a line level position, just started, that can go and start the conversation in a lunchroom, after work in the parking lot, whatever it may be. This is how change occurs, is we've got to lift up our voices and start to not only challenge the status quo, but just review it.
Yeah.
Just open the books and look at every little thing, like you said, those micro things, you know, that are going on in our daily lives, and start to ask the questions.
Yeah.
And I think that'll turn the page.
Use your voice in a positive way.
Yeah.
Don't tear down and you know, force your view on other people, but try, and like all these little, all those tips that you just gave are perfect.
Oh,
use your voice in a way. If you see injustices, stand up for it. You know, so many people you hear, you know, and one one example I'll give all the time is that I had a friend who was, he was Caucasian, and he said, you know, when I'm with all my white friends, everybody says the N-word and, you know, whatever, right? And that's just normal. And you hear that a lot in Salt Lake City.
Yep.
And so, and why we got into this conversation, it's because he accidentally said it in front of me.
Oh.
And then he was like, oh, I would normally never say that in front of a black person.
Right.
So think about, and that's really extreme, right? But change in that group, right?
Yeah.
Like, you hear all of this, you know that it's not right because you didn't like how it came out when you said it in front of a minority.
Yeah.
So voice that opinion to your friends in real life. Like, hey, why do we say this? Why is this okay?
That's right.
Like, I'm not going to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And those small changes in your personal life, that's going to cause a ripple effect, and that's how we're going to make a big movement and change.
I love that. Sydney, you've blessed the microphone, my friend. I'm so glad to have you here, and I'm grateful for, you know, the hard work that you do. And like I said, the, you know, what you're trying to put together now is just another, you know, a testament to the person that you are in trying to bring people together. Not only just trying to teach somebody one side of the viewpoint and educate them on that, but instead bring them together. And I encourage, you know, all those that listen to the podcast, find opportunities to do that in your personal life, in your work life, your communities. Because like I said, this is all about the human experience. You know, going back to what you said about the workplace and having discussions around politics and religion, faith, gender, you know, whatever it may be, disabilities, you know, like I said, it's something that we've shied away from our entire lives. We always say,
can't now,
don't do
because
it.
Of social media, right?
Yeah.
Like, so I hear this. I have this debate with business owners all the time, which is, you know, don't talk about politics and religion and race. Okay, fine. Don't talk about it from 9 to 5.
Sure.
That's great in theory.
But,
you know, your friends, you go grab a drink, or you're on social media, you're friends with your coworkers on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, and they post a hashtag Black Lives Matter, or they post something about they don't like LDS or whatever the case may be. And you think that that's not going to filter back into your workforce.
Absolutely.
It absolutely is.
And we've got to prepare people for those conversations.
Yes.
Like you said, we've got to encourage them so we can start to look at people from different angles. And if people can't tolerate it, well, that's where we need to hold them accountable.
Yeah.
If you can't tolerate another person, so if you can't agree to disagree, then that's a maturity problem. That's a you problem. And we need to be able to fix that so we can have those comfortable. Because like I say all the time, human experience is what we need to get to in our workplaces, which is we need to be able to talk about the challenges we're having. We need to be able to feel like organizations support us in those challenges as well and give us solutions on how we can solve them, whether it be addiction, you know, going back to the Hadlocks and what they promote, you know, down to, like I said, faith, if we have differences in faith or whatever it may be. We need to be able to have respectful conversations and look at people. That's going to be the great place we get to. Not ignore it and say you can't talk about it because it still lingers. And it's almost awkward because, like, I'd love to talk to you about this, but I don't think we can because it's not really permittable.
I'm always saying, like, in the absence of transparency, people make crap up.
Yeah, that's right.
It applies to everything.
Ain't that the truth?
So let's just address it head on, have a hard conversation, and I think it will make us all better.
I love that. And even if you think we have a lack of leadership, you know, from the very top of our nation's capital, you know, don't let that hold you back, you know, and don't, I would encourage you from my own viewpoint, don't you burn too much energy trying to fight that battle, because it is what it is. Fight that battle in November, fight the battle in the ballot box and make that change. But in the meantime, I never look up for somebody to make change. I look within.
Yeah.
I say, look at this leader within you and what you have the capability to make change on. Because that's like the definition of insanity, right? Is, you know, obsessing or being frustrated over something you have no control over changing. Don't burn your energy doing it. Find the things that you have the proximity to make a difference and go and approach those things.
Yeah.
Other things, they'll take care of themselves, and we can, you know, get together as communities and make that happen. And it is what it is. But, you know, don't spend too much time and effort burning that. Put that time and energy and talent into doing something you actually are capable of doing.
Exactly.
And if you need solutions, like I said, there's many bright individuals that, you know, like Sydney's going to be inviting to this. Another quick pitch I want to give is, you know, if you're looking here in the local Utah area, reach out to James Jackson III with Zions Bank. I love James, childhood friend of mine. He was on the podcast. We did a big thing around diversity and inclusion. He has now put together, in fact, today we're recording this on a Friday. He actually put together and worked with Utah Business to have a webinar to be able to talk to people about next steps and actions that we can take, which I love. And so those are the kind of people you reach out to because they want to provide solutions, not just, you know, garner attention or talk about it. They want to be about it. And so they're there to provide solutions. So if you're looking for solutions and you really are about that life and you're not just about talking about that life, then make sure you get with some of those people and they can help you with that.
So, absolutely.
Anything else you want to share, Sydney?
This has been great. Thank you so much for having me.
Are you as intimidated as you were when you jumped on?
Oh my gosh, yes. I really was.
Cindy was nervous when we got on, just full disclosure.
I was so nervous and I still am. I'm like, oh, clammy. I can talk so much before and then we get on. I'm like,
ooh. You are phenomenal. And I appreciate your insight because I think it's going to resonate with a lot of people, especially those of us who are of multiple ethnicities that, you know, kind of, whether we embrace it or we're trying to figure out that, navigate that road. Like you said, some it happens very young, some it's older. And I just appreciate your insight because I think many people are going to be able to resonate with that and say, oh gosh, there's other people that feel that way as well. And we have people to latch to and look towards. So you're going to be a great example to my children, especially as they're growing up and navigating those waters to be able to lean on. So thank you so much, Sydney. Love you to death. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you. You're fantastic.
And we'll look forward to this big event that you put on, and we'll be there to support you the whole way. So real quick, give all our listeners the ways that they can contact you and get in communication, whether it be social media or otherwise.
Yeah. LinkedIn, email, sydney.bruce@every.com is my email. So a little Every plug there.
There's our Every plug, which if you're with a payroll system, dump it tomorrow and get with Every.
Yes, I got Carl on board, so let me help you.
And if you need more information, I love Every. Every is a very, they look at financials and your personal finance and your worth a lot differently than major organizations do. And they are the payroll provider and good friend of the show and good friend of the organization, Life Engineering, in whom I am employed. And we love what they do and really trying to empower people to make great decisions every day. So shout out to the Every team. Sure love them. So good. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the podcast. We always appreciate you checking in and downloading episodes and being able to share their value with others around you. Hope you're able to take the things that Sydney shared with you and take that to impact those that are in your communities, in your families, in your neighborhoods, your workplaces, and be able to really do what she's doing and reach out and make a difference. We love you so much. Thanks so much. And aloha.